So, how long we got? Where's our destination today?
I don't know. We got 20 miles to cover. Let's talk some movies. People don't know how to drive.
Are we going to get lunch on this gig? You seen anything good recently?
Not really. We got a little time, Steve. Let's do a podcast.
Sounds good.
All right. Welcome to another edition of Film Driven. I'm Andre Shane.
I'm Steve Haska.
And we are driving through the finally snowy streets of suburban Chicago.
Yeah.
Winter is here. We're doing our annual Oscar show, and we often do it in the confines of our home studio, but today we are, in fact, on the road.
Back on the road, yeah.
And, what can you say about the Oscars this year, Steve? Anything unusual strike you about this Oscar?
Yeah, there's some unusual stuff. I will say, overall, I thought last year was a pretty good year for movies. There's a lot of good stuff, and
right.
The Oscars are looking fairly pedestrian. It's almost disappointingly so. Some worthy candidates, but it's all kind of the usual characters,
right.
And a couple opportunities for maybe some unusual choices that they said, nah. case in point, we have 9 Best Picture nominees this year.
Right.
For the past couple of years, there was the year it was 10, and then after that they said, well, it can be up to 10. That rule, of course, famously is kind of informally known as the Dark Knight rule, from when the Dark Knight came out. So what's funny is that, a rule, an expansion of the Best Picture list to accommodate, really renowned populist films, to allow them into the usual fall serious bait. So that's what they did. So this year, 9, there's a slot open. I thought there were 3 really good populist movies that came out before the fall, and none of them are in that list.
That's right. Dark Knight Rises was not nominated.
Dark Knight Rises, The Avengers, and I thought The Hunger Games was a great populist film in the spring, and the Oscars decided that, no, none of those films. The 9 nominees, only one of them was released before October, and that was a very arty indie film, Beast of the Southern Wild.
Right.
But everything else is right in the calendar of when you expect the Oscar contenders to be released.
Right, right. So no major surprises in the categories. You know, again, the whole expanded list of Best Picture nominees is weird to me. I really think, if they're going to expand the Best Picture nominees, they may as well expand the other categories. It seems bizarre to me. And this is pretty much what everybody was saying, but, the Best Director category really left people high and dry, essentially, in terms of their directorial efforts. Ben Affleck and Catherine Bigelow both did not get the Best Director nods. Both certainly deserved Best Director nods, and their pictures were nominated for Best Picture, but they were ignored. So,
yeah, and it's, like everybody else, I was a bit shocked that both Affleck and Bigelow were not nominated. But then when you look at the 5 people who were nominated, they're all worthy folks.
Sure.
I confess I haven't seen Life of Pi, but I like a lot of Ang Lee's other movies, it's got good reviews. A lot of people I know really enjoyed that film. So you look at the list, and there's not a glaring person who made the director nominees that you're like, oh, like that loser.
Exactly. And I don't know. It's still a little dubious to me, but what can you do? So let's, talk about the movies that were nominated. So what do we have this year? Of course, Lincoln, which I did not see, which everybody seems to like. Did you see Lincoln?
I did see Lincoln. I liked Lincoln a lot better than I thought I would. I didn't think I would dislike it. To me, a big judge of a movie is how long it stays with you. And I thought about Lincoln a lot more than I expected to after I left the theater. Like, it's real solid. That said, I have a little bit of a backlash towards Lincoln here at the Oscars. Because, you know, there's a dark horse contender here, which we'll talk about when we get to it. But the Oscars are all set up from the nominees for Lincoln to just dominate.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's that good a film. Like, it's a good film, but it's not a good enough film that it's an obvious, like, oh, yes, it should just win everything.
Right. It's an explicitly important film that people feel should be nominated as long as it's got some degree of quality. Spielberg directed, and obviously he knows what he's doing.
Sure, and I mean, it's got a great script by Tony Kushner, Daniel Day-Lewis, so we'll probably get to him. I mean, you know, he's great. I mean, right. He's great, and lots of great supporting turns. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones is nominated. Also, James Spader gives an awesome performance in that film, which I would have nominated him. It's a good film. It is, as you said, an obvious, important film. You know, when I walked out of the theater, I was talking to my wife about these kind of self-important biopics. Even at their best, it's kind of... that's not going to be your favorite movie. When you think about the movies that really capture your heart and you get excited to talk about... I mean, have you ever met anybody who you're like, what's your favorite movie? And it's like, you know what's my favorite movie? Gandhi. Gandhi or Ray. Man, Ray was like the best movie I've seen in 6 years.
Yeah, it falls into that category, clearly. But again, I haven't seen it, so it's hard for me to talk about it. But Daniel Day-Lewis, I mean, what can you say? It's a perfect role for him. I mean, he seems to have been born to play Lincoln, and I'm sure he was fantastic.
He's great. I mean, the best thing you can say about him is he really makes Lincoln a great movie character. Like, you watch the movie, and I just liked him. Like, you know, he's kind of an endearing man who tells, you know, sometimes corny jokes, and when he's off the screen, I wanted him back on.
Right.
Like, when's Lincoln coming around again? I like that guy. He's kind of funny, smart.
Well, the other films that I have not seen...
Let's go through those birds.
Well, The Beast of the Southern Wild, which is supposed to be great.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
You have seen it?
I have.
And what did you think of that?
It's a real solid first film. Its nominee as Best Picture seems a little tokenish.
Mm-hmm.
It's not nearly as strong as these other movies. I mean, it's a unique movie, and, you know, it is well directed. It's visually interesting. For a first film, it's pretty impressive. I mean, you mainly come away from it going, that guy's got talent. But, you know, it's... yeah, I in some ways, I don't have a whole lot to say about it other than it just felt... not fully complete. There's some amateurish aspects of it.
Right. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah.
How about Silver Linings Playbook?
Silver Linings Playbook is real good. The biggest knock you could say against it is at the end of the day, it's basically a romantic comedy, but it's very well done. David O. Russell is one of the people nominated for Best Director, and I think it's deserved. I think he's become a really great director. Had you know, I've read some complaints about David O. Russell that boil down to he used to be a lot weirder. He used to make quirkier movies, and now he makes more standard populist films. That's a little misleading to me because he has just a level of craft and intelligence and creativity to these films that's missing. I mean, like, there's a reason The Fighter is better than a standard boxing movie. And there's a reason Silver Linings Playbook is more interesting than your average romantic comedy. And a lot of it comes down to him. And he's one of my favorite directors of chaotic group scenes. That so often in movies these days, I feel that directors take a lazy route when they have, say, a large family arguing or a crowd or people get in a fight. And all they do is they do, all right, let's just go handheld and just have the actors do the action and we'll just shoot it. It'll be crazy. And you watch it and it just feels lazy. And David O. Russell does the same scenes, but he uses a lot of Steadicam. So things are really timed out and framed, and you still get that kinetic sense of motion and movement and chaos, but just a lot more thought out. So anyway, the Silver Linings Playbook is great. The actors in that movie are also really awesome, which at this point is kind of par for the course in a David O. Russell film, and they're justifiably nominated. So.
How about Les Miserables?
That I did not see.
I have also not seen Les Miserables. So I don't want to talk about it. I'm not too keen on seeing it for some reason.
Yeah, me neither.
But some people seem to enjoy it, and God knows it's got a lot of awards heaped on it. So it's either one of those things that just appeals to the Academy right in the pocket, or it's really awesome. One of those is true.
So Les Miserables, a movie neither one of us has seen and neither plans to. That's the kind of expert analysis we give here on Film Driven.
That's right, that's right. That's why you guys come here, to hear us talk about movies we have not seen. But,
one more we haven't seen. Have you seen Amour?
Amour, of course. I have not seen Amour as well. Yes, the elderly French people movie.
Yes.
Again, heard great things about it. The French, of course, can make some good movies. And last year, a French film won the Best Picture.
It's true.
I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen this year, Steve.
I doubt it.
I don't know if Amour is going to take it. But people do enjoy that movie. It's supposed to be very moving. I always had a feeling about movies about elderly people sort of in their twilight years. That subject matter always struck me as a little bit of a gimme. You know, like you can milk emotion by showing old people in the last parts of their lives. It doesn't seem like it's a big home run to get an emotional response from that subject matter.
I mean, the word on Amour, one of the things that's supposed to be great about it is that it is, for the most part, an unflinching, honest look at the horrible parts of aging, but still has the emotional currents with it. I will say that watching a two-hour French movie where in the second half a man's beloved wife just completely falls prey to dementia and loses control of her bodily functions while he cares for her. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun.
No, it's not a good time. I think with Lincoln, you know, like you still know how that turns out. But
yeah.
It seems like there's more there. But again, what more can we say about a film we haven't seen? Except that we hope to see it down the line, I guess.
Yes.
So let's talk about movies we have seen.
All right.
Django Unchained. Seen it.
Yeah.
Weird Best Picture nominee for me. I mean, it just seems like, I don't know. I don't know if I would have nominated Django Unchained as Best Picture.
I don't either. And it's kind of interesting because for all the talk of, you know, Quentin Tarantino still gets talked about a little bit of, like, the Hollywood bad boy. And you could argue that Django Unchained is a movie made by somebody who doesn't give much of a shit about, you know, what he's supposed to be doing. But the fact that it's nominated for Best Picture makes it seem that Quentin Tarantino is firmly in that kind of Woody Allen, Steven Spielberg level of Academy voting where people were like, oh, it's the new Tarantino movie. Yeah.
It's got to be great.
Yeah,
and we've said it in our past podcast about Tarantino that Django Unchained is a fine film. I enjoyed it. It has a lot of great things in it. It has a lot of fun performances. But it seems like a weird Best Picture movie. I mean, it is a bit of an exploitation film. It's very violent. It has an interesting slant on the subject of slavery, a subject not commonly covered in a lot of movies, really in the history of Hollywood. Not a lot. Some, definitely, but not a lot. And this movie sort of is an action revenge thriller with sort of a slave era South as its setting. It's not as a film as strong as Tarantino's previous film, and which was also nominated for an Academy Award. It doesn't have a script on the level of that film, and it does seem a little bit like a knee-jerk nomination. Like they were just like, who can we nominate? Like they didn't know who else to slot into this puffed-up category, so they went with Django. Again, a recently released movie, a little controversy there, but that does not seem to belong on that list. Out of the films I've seen, it seems to be a little bit of an odd duck out.
Yeah, it's, you know, Inglourious Basterds, as you mentioned, was nominated for a bunch of things, and as we both agree, was a lot better. And apart from Christoph Waltz's performance, Inglourious Basterds won nothing.
Right.
And that's kind of what I expect from Django Unchained.
Yeah, yeah. I don't expect a lot of awards to go to Django Unchained. There is a little bit of that, you know, the original screenplay, because Django Unchained, of course, written by Quentin Tarantino. That is a possibility. It's a possibility. It has a shot in that.
Sure. The best thing I can say about it is, perhaps more than other directors, I think Tarantino honestly could give a shit if Django Unchained wins Best Picture. So
right.
It should not really affect his next move one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. How about Argo?
I loved Argo. I thought Argo was great. Argo, you know, when it came out, I thought would be a strong Best Picture contender. And it's now kind of, if there's one movie that people think might beat Lincoln, it's Argo.
Yes.
And part of it is this, as you said, the outrage of Ben Affleck not getting nominated. So consequently, post-Oscar nominations, Argo's won a whole lot of stuff. It's won at the Golden Globes. Ben Affleck won at the Directors Guild. I mean, it's been racking up prizes, and Ben Affleck seems to have, he's parlaying his goodwill very well, and I personally would like to see Argo Best Picture over Lincoln. I thought it was probably a better movie overall, but it's not radical. It's just a really well-done, entertaining thriller.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is, and it is. It's very well done. It's very fun to watch.
Yeah.
You do learn something about, you know, the period and Iran and all that stuff, but the movie is—it's a movie, you know. It's not a docudrama. It's not trying to shatter any preconceived notions. It is a thriller, and
yeah.
It is a very much a movie thriller, because, you know, what Affleck does in that movie is, like, he tightens the screws pretty well, but he does it in a way that's very cinematic, which
sure.
is, in this case, for what I'm saying, is both a compliment and a little bit of an insult too, because I think a lot of it is really, I mean, he stacks the deck pretty heavily. And
yeah,
in
he's medium restrained until the end, and then the final like 10 minutes of the movie, or 10 to 15 minutes, he does lay it on a little thick.
Yes.
And you get just slightly disappointed, because he's done such a good job until then, that you're like, no, Ben, you know, you don't need to. You can lay off the whipped cream a little bit. Like,
right.
You know, what the sundae you've built is delicious. It's
right,
fine.
Right. And you know what else annoyed me about Argo? As much as I enjoyed it, at the very, you know, like the closing credits are running, and all of a sudden he cuts in with some kind of an interview with Jimmy Carter. And the thing is, it was completely unnecessary. And, you know, a lot of the movie kind of made fun of Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
And then at the end, to have this interview with Jimmy Carter seemed like kind of a kiss-ass sort of a move. Like, like, well, we didn't mean to make fun of you, Mr. Liberal Icon Jimmy Carter. You know, so we'll put this little gimme at the end, and a little tip of the hat to Jimmy Carter, who we kind of eviscerated earlier in the film through the mouths of multiple characters. So I found that to be kind of weird. I was just sitting there, and I kind of looked around me, and other people were like, huh, what the hell is this? You know, what is this soundbite out of a sudden? It adds nothing to the film, of course. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily take away a lot from
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, all this stuff we've just said are quibbles. I mean, I loved Argo. I came out of the theater, like, revved up. It's like, wow, that was a great, you know, my wife loved it. It was a good time. Argo's got a great script, too. I mean, some of the funniest lines I heard in a theater this year are actually in Argo. I laughed out loud many times in Argo.
Right.
And so, great. And it also further continues, you know, I think we both enjoyed Ben Affleck's two previous films.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I don't necessarily know. I guess it's an evolution that Argo, like Zero Dark Thirty, I mean, that's an impressive movie just to stage. Like,
right.
Logistically, it's a
oh,
complicated
yeah.
movie. And he handles it beautifully.
Beautiful.
And at no point are you ever taken out of the movie where you just have to stop and marvel at the artificiality or something.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, so I hesitate to say it's an evolution just because I thought Gone Baby Gone was real good.
Well, I thought Gone Baby Gone was terrific, but you know, Argo's a period piece, so there's an aspect of period pieces that, you know, it's more difficult to do a period piece than to do a contemporary film. And Argo's great. It looks awesome. It looks like a movie, you know, from the late 70s, and there was definitely an effort on Affleck's part to give it the vibe of the movies of that era. You know, the costumes are great. The reenactments and sort of the stuff in Tehran is pretty amazing. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of respect goes to the director and, you know, the whole team behind Argo that, you know, they really, really pulled it off well. But in the realm of, like, sort of realistic docudrama, we have Zero Dark Thirty, a movie about sort of the hunt for Osama bin Laden that Catherine Bigelow directed. I gotta say, I like Zero Dark Thirty more as a film than I liked Argo. I thought it was more complex, both intellectually and logistically, too. I mean, it takes place in a lot of different places. It has a bigger cast. It's difficult to make a film like Zero Dark Thirty because, you know, we know some of the players involved. You know, there's real individuals in the film. It's just such a broad story with so many different aspects. You know, Argo is very streamlined. There's a mission to rescue some of the escaped hostages, and everything sort of revolves around that mission. In Zero Dark Thirty, there is a mission to capture bin Laden, but that mission takes place over years. I mean, years go by. So the movie's very episodic, and episodic movies can kind of take you out of them a little bit. It's hard to do episodic movies because a lot of times, you know, when your structure is episodic, it's hard to really engage the audience. And I felt that Zero Dark Thirty really grabbed me and really held me there for its 2-hour, 30-minute running time. And it just, I mean, it blew me away. I thought it was excellent.
I'm with you. I think it was probably pound for pound the best movie of the year. I've seen it twice. You say it's not a short movie. At no time did I ever look at my watch in that movie.
No.
And it goes along. It has, and I think that's the difference between that and Argo is, like, Argo is lovable. And right. Zero Dark Thirty
is,
like,
not lovable.
No, I mean, you love it in the sense that you love great movies.
Right.
But, I mean, you nailed it. It's just way more complex.
It is.
I mean, you know, you could argue that Zero Dark Thirty is also, you know, it's a movie about, hey, yay, we got bin Laden, we got the bad guy. But Zero Dark Thirty is not a movie that makes it that simple.
No.
And
no,
at
not
the
at
end
all.
At the end of that film, it leaves you with, I think, an appropriate, I mean, it's a sense that not quite a tragedy, but that something heavy has happened. You know, that you're kind of left thinking, well, you know, we accomplished something, but what did we accomplish? What did we do to get there?
Right.
Where do we go now? And it's great. I mean, I will say, out of all, I am kind of stunned that Bigelow didn't get a nomination for. And to be frank, it smacks a little bit of sexism in the sense that I wonder if some people wondered, you know, she won for The Hurt Locker, which I also thought was a very good movie.
Yes.
Maybe they just thought, well, we gave her Oscar, she's done. That said, Spielberg has multiple Oscars.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like Lincoln as a film, and I think Spielberg's a great director, but, I mean, you tell me, which is harder, to get a bunch of middle-aged people to reenact Civil War, not even battles, Andre, courtroom scenes?
Right.
Or to stage, you know, a Pakistani protest?
I mean, or a raid on the bin Laden compound.
Yeah.
I mean, that sequence was mind-boggling and amazing and shocking. And, I mean, it was a real roller coaster ride, both in terms of its sort of visceral thrill, but also in terms of its sort of nuanced slant on the whole thing. I mean, it was interesting, it was emotionally engaging, and it was intellectually engaging.
Yeah, and the tone of those, she walks such an interesting line in both that and The Hurt Locker. And, you know, a lot of people say that those movies are apolitical, and that's not quite right, but the difference is there's politics in those movies, but they're so much subtler
right.
than the standard, like, shouting talking head stuff you're looking at. That right. It's not, you know, people are used to when you say something's political, they expect it to have either a clear-cut right or left-wing bias.
Right.
And these movies, I mean, you know, Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker are both primarily concerned with the nuts and bolts of, like, what it's like in these professions
right.
that you don't get explored very much. And the people in those professions, you know, are faced in pretty extreme situations where a lot of them are just kind of doing their job, like, to just do your job to the best of your ability in these situations. Like, as far, like, you don't have time for... You're like, well, what's the National Review going to think of
for
this?
For a lot yeah. of questioning, absolutely. And then, you know, and of course, there is sort of the issue with Zero Dark Thirty is because the movie does not take a moralistic stance to a lot of what it's showing. It's sort of leaving that to the audience. And I think a lot of people were put off by that. I think a lot of people who go to the movies want to have a clear-cut moral stance outlined for them by the film. And Bigelow just does not want to do that in this movie. It does not interest her to take a moralistic stance towards what's happening in Zero Dark Thirty. And I think that really turned people off. I mean, the movie clearly shows some extremely brutal torture scenes, and the movie also, you know, clearly shows that, you know, some of the information that led to the eventual killing of Bin Laden was derived from that torture. Boy, that really pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah, and...
They just wanted the film to condemn torture, and the movie does not support torture, but it doesn't condemn it. It just shows it in kind of a neutral way, and I think that sort of neutrality is gonna cost Zero Dark Thirty Best Picture. I mean, there's no way that film's gonna win.
I mean, I think
yeah. Beast of a Southern Wild's got a better chance. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Zero Dark Thirty already feels like a fairly great movie that it's just going to take some time to fully reckon with.
Right.
That we're still going to be kind of sorting out our feelings and opinions of that movie for a while. And those type of movies in the long run are great, but it's, you know, for the most part, yeah, they don't win the prizes. At least not right away.
Right.
But
right.
I think that movie's going to, you know, it's early to tell. It's only been out a couple months, but that to me just feels like a complex, rich movie that's going to age well and will not be taking home any shiny.
Right. Right.
Good job, Oscars.
Yeah, yeah, time will tell. I mean, a lot of movies that are that timely, in other words, the movies that are clearly about the here and now, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of movies like that actually don't age well. You know what I'm saying? Because they're too in the moment.
I guess the reason I would think this would do better than that is because it's not providing pat commentary on that.
Right.
Like, to me, yeah, if you're trying to do an up-to-the-minute moralistic stance on something, for example, like Wall Street. Like, that's a movie I saw in the mid-90s, and it felt like I was just watching some time. You know, like, it felt right. like I was watching the hippest movie of 1987.
Right.
And so it felt kind of dated. But I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, who am I to predict the future? Just
right.
for this, it's about current events and up to the minute, but it presents them and then lets the viewer deal with what it means.
Yeah, the
repercussions. That's why I think it might be interesting, because it's not really laying its cards on the table about what you're supposed to think about
right,
all that.
Right. And I think that's exactly what makes it great.
Yeah.
And in many ways, it's what made The Hurt Locker great. But, you know, I mean, in my opinion, Zero Dark Thirty is a better film than The Hurt Locker. I love The Hurt Locker, but
I think
Zero Dark Thirty is a better movie.
Yeah.
Not going to win. But talk about complex achievements, though. Life of Pi, Steve. I know you haven't seen Life of Pi. I have seen Life of Pi.
Oh, there you go.
And it's really good. I really, really enjoyed it. The thing with The Life of Pi is that it's based on a novel. It's based on a novel that's complicated and difficult to grasp from a cinematic perspective. Like, I wouldn't know how to approach Life of Pi, the novel, as a film. But Ang Lee took it on, and boy, it is a good film. It's thought-provoking, it's intelligent, it's visually stunning, it tackles some interesting subjects. I mean, it's a movie that tackles the notion of spirituality and what it means to be a spiritual person, what it means to believe in the higher power. And it kind of presents everything in a metaphorical way. I tell you, it is complex intellectually. And again, I think a lot of people were turned off a little bit by some of the things in The Life of Pi, particularly the ending of the film kind of, let's say it somewhat undermines everything we have seen up to the point in the film and makes you question the veracity of what you saw previously. But that's the whole point of the film.
Yeah, and it's actually true to the novel.
Exactly, and I thought that was just great. And not everybody felt that. A lot of people felt kind of let down and felt like a rug has been pulled out from under them by making them question what they saw previously, where that is the whole point. You know, it's a film about religion, and religion, of course, depends on the leap of faith. You either believe or you don't. And that's what the film sort of lays out for you. Doesn't present answers, much like Zero Dark Thirty, but asks some fascinating questions. And does it in just visually stunning terms. I mean, it is a 3D movie. It is a movie that uses 3D brilliantly. I'm very happy that I got to see it in the theater in 3D. And I don't say that often. It certainly deserves its nomination. A fine picture.
One other glaring omission from this list. Sometimes there are categories of Best Picture nominees where it feels that the people nominating these movies, they just kind of have this smell of like, oh, this is something important. You know, maybe it's not going to win, but like, oh, we should, you know. And then there are other movies that get a lot of critical accolades that you sometimes feel the general audience is like, man, I just don't even want to deal with that.
Right.
You know, I'm just not touching that. And to me, the movie this year that's just a glaring omission is The Master. It got the three major actors in that film all got nominated, deservedly so. I mean, on our Anderson versus Anderson podcast, we kind of touched on how Joaquin Phoenix gives a, frankly, jaw-dropping performance.
Yeah, amazing performance.
There. And Philip Seymour Hoffman, kind of customarily good. And Amy Adams, I like Amy Adams in general, and she was one of my favorite performances of the year in that. But The Master, I mean, yeah, that movie on most critics' polls was like one or two all over the country. And we got a slot left on that 10 Best Picture things. And The Master and Paul Thomas Anderson are nowhere to be found on this year's Oscar nomination.
Yeah, it's
so
a shame.
Let me ask you, Andre, do you put any stock into the old Hollywood Scientology conspiracy theory on that?
You know, I haven't really thought about it as a conspiracy theory, obviously. I mean, I am totally with you. I thought The Master was an excellent film, and I think it deserves to be on the list of the best pictures of the year.
Yeah.
It is a daring movie. It is a movie that does not abide by cinematic convention.
Ew.
It is also a movie that does not expose Scientology. I mean, it is not an expose of Scientology. Okay, anybody who expects an expose of Scientology is going to walk out very disappointed from The Master. And I think a lot of people actually expected that. The Master has a lot going on. It is a deep, deep film. There is a lot happening in The Master. You could interpret it in many ways. Some people think it's just an outright sort of meditation on all organized religions. You could certainly view it this way. Other people view it as kind of a existential piece that basically says, hey, you know, we are, we're just monkeys and there's only so much changing we can do. No matter who is, you know, trying to cure us and make us better. And then there's the aspect of, you know, just taking it at face value. A story about a guy trying to start a new religion and really kind of failing while at the same time succeeding. It's a strange movie. It's definitely not for everybody. And I think ultimately The Master got left off the list because it's just too weird for the Academy to nominate. It's just weird, man. It's a weird movie.
I'm with you. I don't think there's any sort of Scientology conspiracy, primarily because, as you said, if, you know, I think if you were in the Church of Scientology and were like, all right, let's see this asshole movie, then you would probably come away being like, oh, well, I don't even know what to...
Yeah. I mean, the movie wasn't critical, it wasn't explicitly critical of Scientology. Certainly no more critical of it than it, you know, it would be of any other organization.
And there's some things in there if you're looking for them, but it's...
Sure.
That's what I mean. If for anyone who hasn't seen The Master, it's hard to describe because it's not an expose of Scientology. It's not the Scientology movie. At the same time, it's not about Scientology.
Right.
It's not like that stuff is absent. But I agree with you. I think people were just... That movie's too strange for them to even recognize. The other thing about The Master, I mean, we talk about how, you know, Argo is way more lovable than Zero Dark Thirty. I mean, Zero Dark Thirty to me is like a Garfield cartoon on the lovable scale compared to The Master.
Well, The Master is not trying to be lovable. Yeah. It's not trying to get you to like it. It's an art film.
You know, I watched that film and I was certainly intrigued. I'm interested to see it again, but that was not the most pleasant 2 hours I spent in the theater.
You had to work for it.
Yeah, I mean, your guide for that whole film is a rather unlikable, aggressive alcoholic.
Your guide for the film, your main character, your central character who you are sticking with for the entire picture, is not one of those lovable losers. It's not one of those rogues that does bad things but you still kind of like him. This guy is just an asshole. This guy is the crazy uncle you try to avoid at family gatherings. Okay, and this is your central character, and he stays that way. He never changes. He stays that way. You understand him a little more, but at the end, you really don't understand him. And that lovability factor is clearly missing from The Master.
And I think similarly, that is why Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win Best Actor over Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
Because I mean, they're both, you know, they're very different performances, but you know, I love Daniel Day-Lewis in general. I mean, he may be my favorite current actor, but part of me is kind of like, you know, let's... You know, my opinion of the Oscars are that they're a little frivolous anyways.
So right.
I'm like, well, why don't we give it to somebody else? And, I mean, Joaquin, you can't take your eyes off him. I mean, it's like, it's a fascinating... But Joaquin Phoenix himself is... No one's quite sure how sane he is and what to make of him. And he has not made himself... lovable.
Well, so. I mean, he's openly criticized the entire Oscar charade, and he said he's not interested in even going to the event. I think he probably will go. My guess is we'll see Joaquin at the Oscars, but I mean, he didn't get him. He didn't do himself any favors by, you know, talking shit about the Academy and about the Oscars and so on and so forth. But I'm with you. I mean, that was a unique, fascinating, and bordering on genius performance.
Yeah.
I'm sure Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win. I'm sure Daniel Day-Lewis was fantastic. But I'm also sure that Daniel Day-Lewis does not give a performance that is so stunningly original that we've never seen it before. I'm just positive of it. Joaquin Phoenix did, and I'd love to see him win, to be honest with you, just for the weirdness factor. Like,
sure.
I'd like to see him, I'd love to hear his acceptance speech. I mean, but getting back to the picture a little bit, you know, there was a bit of a kerfuffle kerfuffle is a word I don't use often, Steve. But
just roll with it. I'm okay.
There was a kerfuffle between Paul Thomas Anderson and Harvey Weinstein, who produced The Master, and Anderson just felt that The Master was completely mismarketed. He just felt like the movie was not marketed well, and, you know, I gotta agree with him. I mean, Harvey Weinstein is a master of marketing films. He's an acknowledged master of marketing films. He's an acknowledged master of getting his films, some of them quite mediocre, by the way, nominated and winning Best Pictures. In other words, he can, whatever it is he does, he can do for virtually any reasonable film. And here was a great film and nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. And so I'm kind of...
Yeah, there's an argument to be made that if Harvey Weinstein wanted that movie to be nominated for Best Picture, it would have been.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will say, as you know, I've never met Harvey Weinstein. There's all sorts of stories. You know, he sounds like a bullying asshole. He also has a... produced many, many films I've loved over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I say that Harvey's magic touch, he's better at pushing a crowd-pleasing mediocrity than he is at a truly difficult art film.
Right.
I mean, I famously remember the movie Dead Man with Johnny Depp,
mm-hmm.
a movie I really like.
Yeah,
but
me
I mean,
too.
That's an arty film. It's not,
art
you know...
Art film, totally.
Yeah,
is.
I mean, it's got big stars in it. It's got Johnny Depp and some other people, and it's got some funny bits. But
Robert Mitchum's last movie.
It's totally... It's an art house movie for an art house crowd. And, you know, Jarmusch, that was a Miramax movie, and Jarmusch says, I mean, for the most part, without even any bitterness, just that that movie did not have the famous Miramax muscle behind
no.
it. Like, they took a look at it after they'd agreed to fund it, and were like... Well, here we go. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
We don't know what to do with this thing. Here it is. Whatever. We're moving on.
They let it flail, and flail it did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the same thing with The Master. I mean, same thing with The Master this year. I do think that the Weinstein Company at this point does kind of... It doesn't get behind every movie it produces. It
no.
clearly sort of weighs its options and then kind of puts its chips on... the film that they think has the best chance of winning. And this year, there was just nothing there that they could really get behind that was commercial enough, that could get an audience response. Again, The Master is not a lovable or even likable film. It is a complex art film. You have to think about it. You have to work for it. And those are not the kind of movies that win the Oscar. They just never are.
Yeah.
And therefore, and in this case, of course, it didn't even get nominated. Total snub, but there it goes. Well, how about some of those acting categories? Let's talk about those a little bit.
For the most part, no crazy surprises. The little girl from Beasts of the Southern Wild, who has a name I can't even begin to pronounce, she was quite good. You know, as with any, she was about 8 or so at the time. You know, and any performance of a child that young... part of you is like, you know, you just give the award to the director.
Mm-hmm.
But she was very entertaining. To me, the only kind of surprises in any of the acting categories are, and this happens every year, there are a couple people who have won in the past who are, and it seems like they're just nominated because they've won in the past and we like them. I mean, you know, I like Alan Arkin. I have nothing against Alan Arkin. Alan Arkin did absolutely nothing in Argo.
That he hasn't done in 20 other movies.
That didn't maybe take notice
there
of
was no,
Alan Arkin.
Yeah, yeah.
Similarly, you know, the Silver Linings Playbook has a gazillion great performances in it, but Jackie Weaver is Bradley Cooper's mom in that movie. I mean, it's the least showy role in the whole film. That said, it's unshowy to the point of, I thought that role could have been played by anybody. I mean, you could pick... 100 actresses who could have played that role just fine. So,
well, De Niro got a nomination for Best Supporting in that film, right?
De Niro's nomination is really smacking of... De Niro is good. It's kind of... De Niro seemed invested for maybe the first time in a while.
Yeah.
So it's less of a, wow, De Niro's amazing, more of, hey, De Niro's pretty good, and he used to be the kind of consensus greatest American actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a long time, he's made a bunch of shit. So that's De Niro's nomination. There's a good chance he may win. Like, that may be enough for him to win Best Supporting Actor,
it may
be.
And you know what? That's actually a great prediction. I think De Niro might win, and I think the concept behind his win would be the Academy just trying to encourage De Niro to give a shit about his job.
Yeah.
Instead of just making movies, because that's what he does.
Well, it seemed to happen. I mean, he won some acting award recently. I can't even remember which one, but it kind of made the internet that his acceptance speech was a self-deprecating thing where De Niro is like, wow, it's great to win one of these. I feel like in the past decade, all I do is hand these out to other people. Even made some jokes about he knows that Leo's taken his place in all of Marty's movies. But De Niro seemed to kind of acknowledge that, wow, you know, maybe I've done some good work for the first time in a while.
Because
I used to take these things home every other year in the late 70s and 80s.
Right, but those days are over.
Yeah.
Well, I want to give De Niro some encouragement as the former greatest American actor. But, you know, I think he's fairly lazy. And I don't think he has the passion, the fire in the belly, as it were, for the art of acting these days. And that is why De Niro does not get nominated anymore, and that's why he seems so palpably bored in every film you see him in. And, of course, he also makes a lot of schlock. So he might win. That's a solid prediction. What about best actor? Like, what's your take on Bradley Cooper? Like, I like Bradley Cooper. He's all right, you know. He's got charisma. He can act.
He was real good.
Best actor?
He was real good. It's the type of performance that you don't come out of it like, holy shit, you have to see Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook. Yeah. But he was great. I mean, he was just really good. You bought him as the character. Him and Jennifer Lawrence had great chemistry. I think they're making another movie, maybe even two together. They supposedly got on great. And so he is real good. And it is true if you only know him from his comedic roles. I mean, like all David O. Russell movies, you know, he walks the fine line of drama with a hint of absurdity in it. So there's comedy in the role. But,
right.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper's real good.
I mean, I can't say like
I think that that nomination is a case of which I generally approve of, is he was the very good lead in a very good movie.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like a case of, you know, let's give some encouragement to an up-and-coming leading man, you know? Again, I haven't seen the film. Hard for me to talk about it. I've seen a lot of scenes from it. From watching these scenes, I was not, like, instantly blown away by what I saw Bradley Cooper do. You know, whereas, like, you could say that, well, another David O. Russell movie, like The Fighter, for example, where, you know, if you saw a moment of Christian Bale's performance in The Fighter, I feel like you just want to give him the Oscar
right
there.
It's true. I mean, that was an amazing performance that, you know, multiple people I talked to had the exact same reaction I did, which is that, you know, he's on screen in one of those videotape segments. It's maybe the first thing you see in the
movie. Yeah, the first thing you see in the movie.
And you see him bug-eyed on the couch, and just instantly you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What,
it's
kind of
mind-blowing.
Ride am I going here? Yeah.
It's mind-blowing, and it delivers.
That is not at all what the Bradley Cooper performance is, but it's also, it's a different type of role.
So I
have no problem with him being on the list. I don't think there's any way he's winning, but I don't think it's a sham nomination.
Yeah. I hard to tell, but who do you think is going to win in the Best Actor category?
I think Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
I mean,
okay.
I look at the other ones, and one of the things I love about the Oscars, we talk shit about the Oscars. I love the Oscars, and I love handicapping the Oscars. Like, to me, it's a fun game.
Uh-huh.
Like, who's going to win Best Picture, to me, has nothing to do with what I thought was the best picture
right.
of the year.
Well, and that's why we do these shows.
Yeah, and I like the entertaining aspect of, like, well, who do we think is going to win? And so, you know, if I gave out to what I thought was the most impressive performance, I would probably give it to Joaquin Phoenix. But I think Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win for all the things we just talked about. You know, I haven't seen Flight. It's supposed to be real good.
Mm-hmm.
I like Denzel Washington in general.
Who doesn't?
I'm, you know, if any nominee sticks out there, it's Hugh Jackman on Les Miserables, and I do like Hugh Jackman, so who am I to say?
Well, you know, that's one of those performances where, you know, he does a lot of physical transformation in that film.
Yeah.
He sings, and he is an impressive singer, and he does some pretty cool acting in that movie, so it's a little bit of a kind of a triple threat from an acting perspective, so that seems like a solid nomination. It would be, you know, he might take it. He might be a come-from-behind winner of that.
Yeah, if anybody else splits the vote or something. I mean, one of the things about Hugh Jackman, which I generally like, is Hugh Jackman does a great job of, without cheesiness, just being a shameless entertainer.
Yes.
Like, he seems to have no qualms about... He's almost like an old-school movie star.
Yeah, he's in showbiz, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's here with a charming smile and maybe a little soft shoe.
Sure.
And he's...
And people seem to like him. People who work with Hugh Jackman say that Hugh Jackman is a great down-to-earth guy. You could have a beer with him. He's not locked up in his trailer. He's not, you know, drugged out and angry all the time. Unlike Joaquin Phoenix, pretty much the opposite. He's like the anti-Joaquin Phoenix.
That's right.
Much. But in terms of, like, prediction, I'm going to have to agree with you once again. Lewis is going to win. Phoenix should win.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, as someone who's seen Lincoln, it's not a tragedy.
No, it'll be well deserved, I'm sure. I just think that Phoenix gives a more daring, unique performance. How about Best Actress? What do you think of that, Kim?
Now, this is the place where I do wonder if Zero Dark Thirty may get its one win.
Yes.
Jessica Chastain, who is very good in that movie.
She's awesome.
She's our 35-year-old out-of-nowhere actress who, like, 3 years ago, I didn't know her name.
Right.
And now it seems like I've seen 8 Jessica Chastain movies.
She's ubiquitous this year. She's been in a lot of stuff. You know, Well, she was in a movie that I really liked from earlier this year called Lawless. It's not a great film, but she's great in it, and there's lots of great little performances. And for those of you who find Jessica Chastain attractive, you should probably see Lawless, because you get to see a lot of Jessica Chastain in that film.
The other thing going for Jessica Chastain for winning is something the Academy seems to like, is that she apparently is becoming an honest-to-God movie star.
Yes.
Because Zero Dark Thirty, for as complex as it is making money.
Oh, yeah.
And she is unquestionably the star.
Oh, she's
movie.
A star.
I mean, like, it's not... There's a lot of great performances in that film, but it's her... And there was a couple weeks ago, Andre, the number one movie in the country, or the number two movie in the country was Zero Dark Thirty, and the number one movie in the country was a horror movie called Mama, starring
Jessica Chastain in a dark wig. Yes.
And, you know, I mean, a cynic could argue that, you know, one movie was a horror movie that just happened to star her at a time of year when people were just looking for something to do, and that Zero Dark Thirty, people went more for the film than her. But a lot of people, including presumably Jessica Chastain's agent, could be like, hey, my girl's she's got the two biggest grossing
two
movies
top
in the
movies?
Country.
Yeah, that's rare. You don't see that a lot these days.
Yeah,
she's great. She's a wonderful actor. She's beautiful.
The only person I think might have a chance of beating her is my girl Jennifer Lawrence. Who also is a little bit of a cumulative star power mixed with talent.
She's another one like Chastain in a sense, because she's a big up-and-comer. She's in a lot of big movies. She's popular, and she's extremely talented. And she's lovable, too.
Oh, you know? she's great. I mean, like, a couple of years ago, Winter's Bone was my favorite film of the year, and I thought she was just excellent. She was nominated that year. And, all her work since then has showed that was deserved.
Yeah, she's a star.
She's great in Silver Linings Playbook, and she anchored quite capably The Hunger Games,
which is one
of the year's biggest movies.
Yes, yes.
I think perhaps not Jennifer Lawrence, just because she's just 22.
Yeah.
And her performance, while great in Silver Linings Playbook, is not one of those Christian Bale performances where it just annihilates.
It's not a jaw dropper.
Exactly.
Right.
And so Jessica Chastain, that I also think that's a way for the Academy to throw Zero Dark Thirty a little love.
A little love.
In an acceptable way.
You see, I'm not sure they want to throw it any love. I think there's a serious backlash at this point about Zero Dark Thirty, and I think, you know, there was a guy, this TV actor who's just a real nut job, and he was like literally, he put out some kind of an op-ed piece saying that nobody in the Academy should vote for anybody connected to Zero Dark Thirty because it dared to show torture and not condemn it at the same time. And I mean, and that piece got a lot of publicity. I think that guy's a douchebag for making that statement. I think that is a clearly un-American to make that statement, because artistic expression should not be stifled and should not fit into some guy's box of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. But I do think that there's enough backlash that it may hurt Chastain as well. But I'd like to see her win. Well, what about Best Pictures? I mean, let's give our predictions here.
Well, you know, I personally think it's a two-way race between Lincoln and Argo. I would say Lincoln is the favorite, I guess, just based on Spielberg's weight in the amount of nominees.
Mm-hmm.
There's also something to be said for the fact that, let's face it, Spielberg semi-runs Hollywood at this point, and also seems to quite just openly like winning things.
He does. He loves winning, but also he loses a lot too. Like he gets nominated a lot, but he doesn't win a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that is true, but there's also something to be said that from everything I can tell, Spielberg is kind of aware of when he's got a true contender.
What was the last time Spielberg won Best Picture? It was like Schindler's List, right?
Yes, but he won Best Director for Saving Private Ryan, and famously was just openly pissed off, thought he was almost like a conspiracy against him. The movies he's made since then, none of them have had the kind of momentum behind them at award season that Lincoln has.
Right, right.
You know, like Argo was nominated for Best Picture and Director, Munich.
Right.
But Munich, particularly for Spielberg film, was, you know, that was one of those complex films. That,
well, Munich is a terrific film. I don't know if it deserved to win Best Picture that year. There was a lot of...
Sure, I'm just saying that... I guess what I'm saying is the pictures that Spielberg has made since Saving Private Ryan, he's made some very good ones, but none of them have had this kind of consensus, wow, that was one of the best pictures of the year... going behind it. I mean, there's Catch Me If You Can and AI, which really split people's opinions, Minority Report. I mean, I like a lot of these films.
Me
I think
too.
A lot of them are really good, but none of them at the end of the year on critics' list, none of them had that kind of feel of like, oh, I think this is going to win, whereas Lincoln does.
Yeah. But Lincoln also seems like such a calculated... prestige picture.
Well, yes. But
so it seems to be so needy in terms of, like, give me awards.
I mean,
that turns people
off.
That's
Mr. Spielberg. And I will say that Lincoln resurrects an old problem of his where, more than any other director I know, there are times where I'm watching a Spielberg movie and you hit some point at around the 2 hour and 10 minute mark. Where you just look up on screen and you're like, you almost say out loud, like, fade out, because it's the perfect ending. Like, there it is in front of you. You're like, man, bam, just end the movie and it's a fucking masterpiece. And then there's 15 more minutes.
Yeah.
And Lincoln is completely guilty of this. And once you see it, you'll see, like, you're going to watch it and be like, wow, this is really good. And I think the final 5 minutes of Lincoln, Andre, are going to make you want to tear your hair out. It just... the heavy-handedness.
Yeah.
And
you see, that's just I don't like that, and that's one of the worst aspects of Spielberg's directing always.
Yeah,
it's this sort of cloying desire to, you know, to, I don't know. It's like this cheese factor that he wants to throw into the end of his movies, that just is off. It's artistically off. It's off in terms of storytelling. And I know a lot of people who've seen Lincoln that felt that very, very strongly, that boy, if it wasn't for the last few minutes of the film, Lincoln would be great. But those last few minutes, you can't discount them. I mean, if they ruin the film, then the film is not as good as it could have been, and it's a compromised film.
You know, it comes close.
It should pay for that by not winning.
Yeah, and like I say, the worst part about it is that 5 minutes before then is the perfect ending.
Yes.
I mean, if it ended, you'd be like, you'd applaud.
So many of Spielberg's films are like that. So many. I mean,
yeah.
AI is a perfect example.
Oh, AI is the
it's
one
got
of
that
main,
perfect
yeah.
ending, and then it friggin' goes to another ending. That sucks.
I mean, to me, the AI ending is when the boy's trapped in the ship under the water, just staring at the, like, reflection of the statue under the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm like, roll credits,
that's
great.
That's it. That's
the
ending.
I mean, like, Minority Report, too, which I'm like, I'm going, like, wow, this is great. I thought he should have shot him. And then it would have been like a Roman Polanski.
Right. Exactly. He, like, rips the teeth out of his own film.
He sure does.
He just undermines his own narrative with these sort of pandering endings. And, gosh, I just wish he had somebody who he trusted enough who could, like, tell him, like, Steven, stop it. Don't do this.
I don't think there's anybody around him who does that.
There's just nobody who could tell him that, and it's a shame because I think he could really make a true masterpiece if he just did not give in to the instinct of undermining his own films.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's, you know, a couple of years ago when No Country for Old Men won, I mean, to me, that was the one anomaly Oscar year.
Yes.
Where the movie that I thought maybe was the greatest artistic achievement and was intellectually complex.
Right.
Actually won.
Yeah, that's right. And it beat out a big word-of-mouth film that was, I thought, was overrated,
yeah.
Which was There Will Be Blood.
And it also beat out, I can't remember what the other nominees were, but it beat out some of the much, you know, easier crowd-pleasing films.
Exactly.
Apart from There Will Be Blood.
It was a ballsy win.
But we've gone back. I mean, The Artist won, which to me The Artist is like, The best thing I can say about The Artist is you're like, oh, that was charming. And if that sounds like faint praise to me, it is. And same with 2 years ago, we were right back to, I mean, The King's Speech.
Yeah.
Which if ever there was like the standard bearer of Miramax
right.
mediocrity.
Yeah, prestige mediocrity. That was
give me the awards and I don't want to offend too many people.
Yeah, that was just wretched. Wretched.
And
not that the movie was bad, but it was
deserve
to win.
And it came out in a year when there was many other much more worthy contenders.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous.
And so I don't know, with the fact that The Master was left off the Best Picture nominee and some of the other I just think that Lincoln, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Lincoln just sweeps all the picture directors.
I think I would actually be surprised, Steve, because I don't think that there's a huge swell for Lincoln. I think Lincoln is kind of sliding, and I don't know where the odds makers are at this point in Las Vegas for who's going to win, but I think the trajectory is Argo. I think I would be surprised if Lincoln wins, but I really wouldn't be surprised if Argo wins.
That said, I think Spielberg's got the director category wrapped up because
mm-hmm.
his two biggest competitors aren't nominated.
Right. Well, right. I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson wasn't nominated and the at all. Catherine Bigelow, you know, certainly deserves to be in that crowd. Not nominated, and
the other nominees, there's Michael
David O. Russell ain't
Hankey.
Winning.
I don't know
Michael
that's Hankey. It. And he's not gonna win.
No, Hankey's not winning.
Neither is I can never say his name. Ben Zietlin, who directed Beasts of the Southern Wild, he's not
that's
gonna
crazy.
Win.
That's a crazy. Now, I mean, listen, give the guy Best Picture. Okay, fine. You like the movie, great. But, I mean, best director, really? Well, I haven't seen it, Steve, but really?
It's an encouragement nomination, but it seems a little...
How much more encouragement, does he need? Yeah. The guy got nominated for Best Picture already with this right out of the gate first film, and now he's supposed to get Best Director, too, but Catherine Bigelow's supposed to, like, sit at home and, like, eat popcorn? I mean, I don't understand. It's bullshit. I'm angry, Steve, angry.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if anybody's slot should have been, that would be the one. I mean, yeah. Ang Lee is nominated. That, again, it doesn't feel like he's a true contender. It feels like, he's won before. He's a beloved director. He makes good movies. And people are impressed, like you say, that he just even pulled off Life of Pi.
It's an impressive achievement, and it was an impressive feat to even attempt to make that film, and not much less successfully pull it off. Ang Lee, I'd like to see him win in that category, honestly.
I don't think it would. I mean, I'd like to see David O. Russell as somebody who's made films. I was impressed at David O. Russell's direction.
Yeah.
But I there's a really good chance Argo could win Best Picture, but I would be stunned if anybody other than Spielberg wins Best Director.
Well, time will tell, my friend. Time will tell. So we'll be watching the Oscars, and we'll see. We'll see if we know what the hell we're talking about. You know, we got a decent track record, don't we, Steve? I mean, we're not geniuses or anything like that, but we can. We've foretold some winners
in the past. Fairly skilled prognosticators.
Yeah, we are, and I think this time. We may be right on some of the things we predicted and wrong on other things. That's all I got.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. This is Steve Askin.
Now, Andre Shane. We'll see you next time.
All right.
Burn, Hollywood, burn. I smell a riot going on. First the guilty, now they're gone. Yeah, I'll check out a movie, but it'll take a black one to move me. Get me the hell away from this TV. All the news and views are beneath me. So all I hear about is shots ringing out about gangs putting each other's head out. So I'd rather kick some slang out. All right, fellas, let's go hang out. Hollywood or would they not make us all look bad like I know they had? But some things I'll never forget, yeah. So step and fetch this shit. For all the years we looked like clowns, the joke is over, smell the smoke from all around.